Austin, Texas is big on beer. You can buy a craft brewed beer at its source in more than 20 breweries and brew pubs in and around the city limits. The craft brew market in Austin makes up about 11% of the total beer market here, which might sound small until you compare it with the percentage of the craft brew market nationally, which is only about 5% of total American beer sales. Part of what makes Austin a brewing hotspot is the dedicated community of craft brewers here, whose success is made possible in turn by a supportive and discerning community of craft beer drinkers and home brewers. One Sunday in April, we headed to the Hops and Grain Brewery's tap room on Calle Street to hear what Bob Galligan, their head brewer, had to say about craft brew and the networks and communities that support its growth, as well as the challenges that breweries face in Austin and elsewhere.
The first generation of craft brewers are sort of getting a little long in the tooth, about guys in their 60s and whatnot. You would have been born when this was already kind of underway, right?
After it was underway, yeah.
So what do you think is different about being somebody who's grown up with these products around and the knowledge of them, as opposed to the people who are sort of creating it from scratch?
Actually, that's a really good question. And it is funny because I also have two older brothers, and that really helped. There is an aspect about growing up around craft beer culture that, you're right, I don't think did exist 20 years ago. You know, I mean, when my parents were still, you know, my age and whatnot, even past my age, Coors was craft beer. I mean, it was like good quality from the Rocky Mountains. You could only get in Colorado. If someone showed up with a six-pack of Coors, that was like mind-blowing. And like, where did you get this? And so to move from that kind of model, because even before my parents, you look at the grandparents' generation, you were a Hams man, or you were a Schlitz man, or you were, you know, whatever. You just
had Platts.
You had that one beer that's just what you drink. And it's really interesting, but also really cool to me to see the shift away from that, a reinvention of craft beer in a way that it's more returning to its roots than it is progressing anything else. It's the un-industrialization of beer, which to me is very, very cool to see.
Bob's comment about the unindustrialization of beer is important. It's part of what has contributed to the growth of the craft beer industry recently. There's a wider trend towards unindustrialization, towards small businesses, and towards going local, especially in Austin. More people want their beer to come from close to home.
11% of all the craft beer sales in the U.S. last year was 7.8. That's a huge jump for us. But yeah.
Well, we were talking last week about how when you ask someone in Austin, like, what percentage of the market does craft beer take up, they'll guess like 50 or 60%.
Austin is not the rest of Texas.
Yeah.
You go to the smaller rural towns, you're going to have a hard time finding anything but Budweiser, Miller, Coors, Bud Light. You might find one or two crafts on tap, and that's it. Austin is just a completely different culture. I think part of Austin is, yeah, this is a community, and it's a city that supports craftsmen. It supports people who are doing something that they're interested in, and it's a community that, like you guys, come in and are able to ask the people behind the scenes questions and learn about what they're doing. And I think Austin is very different than the rest of Texas in that way.
Not only different from the rest of Texas, but different from the rest of the United States as well. So clearly, beer is a regional product, especially when it comes to these smaller batch craft brewing companies. Especially since, as we'll hear from Bob later, distribution can be a big legal and technical hassle. While we were on the subject of the deindustrialization of beer, we also asked about the potential industrialization of what we currently think of as local specialty beers. What did a small local brewmaster like Bob think of the emergence of huge national craft breweries like Sierra Nevada in New Belgium?
One of the first craft breweries in America, Sierra Nevada, is still a brewery that I respect the hell out of. That's part of the reason why we have a lab on site. Is because Sierra Nevada is so consistent. I can get a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale in California, in New York, in London. I know exactly what the beer is going to be every time I order it. It might not be my favorite style of beer. Cool, whatever. Every palate's different. The fact that it is so consistent is awesome. And I'll say that. I'll even say that about Budweiser Miller Coors.
Right.
The fact that they are producing the quality product that they are at a consistency that they are is a scientific marvel. I would never want to be a brewer there, ever. But that is awesome that they're able to do that. Sierra Nevada is the same way, just with craft beer. New Belgium was pretty much my gateway beer into craft beer. Fat Tire and Mothership, which they since have discontinued, both those beers were like the beers where I was like, whoa, that doesn't taste like corn. That's awesome. It's really cool to me. I'm friends with Eric Salazar, the actual head of their barrel-aged and souring programs. Lauren Salazar, who does all their science, and he's one of the most brilliant minds in the industry, in my opinion. Last time they were in town, this was one of the only breweries that they visited because they liked what we were doing sour-wise and barrel-aging-wise. It's really cool to me to see breweries, one that, again, I grew up drinking because I did grow up in the midst of craft beer revolution. It's really cool to see these heroes of mine taking an interest in what we're doing. But it's more than that, it's them taking an interest in what the actual community is doing and what the actual industry is doing.
Bob's optimism about the presence of large craft breweries is characteristic of his outlook on all aspects of the beer industry in America. He promotes a friendly attitude towards other small craft brewers as well, and encourages his customers to patronize other Austin brew pubs and tap rooms.
I finish every tour by telling them, all of them, you've been on the tour, telling them to visit the other breweries in town. Go to Beerworks, go to Pine House Pizza, go to Live Oak. Because pretty much not all, because there will be the occasional brewery that thinks they're better than everyone, but most of us who are brewing beer, not only in this city, not only in the state, but in this country, most of us are good friends. And we recognize the fact, like, people always ask me, there's so many breweries that are opening up in Austin. I mean, in the next year, there's probably going to be 2-3 new breweries within a mile of this location. They ask me if I'm worried about that. Not as long as they're making good beer. Come on in, man. Absolutely. Happy to have you. The one thing that I think is going to start dropping breweries out is just the American palate is getting better and better and better and better and better. So the breweries that just aren't making good beer are going to start falling by the wayside. But if you're making great beer, there's no reason this market in Austin or in Texas or in America can't support you, in my opinion.
Bob's vision of the craft brewing industry is fueled by mutual respect and admiration, and a community of supportive customers and devoted brewers. He told us about how his view of the craft brew community is based on the history of how beer has been enjoyed for centuries.
Beer is still a community enjoyment. It's still a way to engage. Even when beer was first produced in this country, I mean, it was made at these little taverns that were completely different in every place. And the person brewing that beer probably was a woman, number one. Not a lot of people realize it, but the first craft brewers in America were women because it was considered baking, pretty much. And she was probably brewing something, a recipe she learned from her grandmother, her great-grandmother from England, from the Czech Republic, from whatever. But so every town you went to had a tavern that was serving different styles of beer, different flavors of beer. And that tavern is where everyone went at the end of the day. Because you didn't even have newspapers, for Christ's sakes, at that time. You just went to that tavern and you learned what was happening in your community, if you could, nationally, if someone was traveling. And I really love that.
Based on his interest in community building around beer, I wondered if Bob had any thoughts about the utility of collaborative brews made between different breweries.
Do you think that collaborations between breweries could kind of fit into?
Oh, absolutely. And collaborations are great.
Because I was thinking New Belgium does a lot of collaboration, and they do that Fat Tire tour and everything.
Tour de Fat,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a kind of community outreach effort.
No, and that is definitely a big model. I mean, you're seeing more and more collaborations nowadays. It's super weird for me to Surly in Minnesota just brew this expensive, very beautiful new like taproom location. They brew some beer there, but most of it is all like inexperienced with like dinner and stuff. But I'm sitting there and I go into their gift shop, which is like almost the size of my taproom. And I'm looking at their merchandise and I see a shirt for the collaboration that they did with Three Floyds, Real Ale, and Surly. I'm sitting there looking at it, I'm like, I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota, or Minneapolis technically, but I'm seeing a brewery that I know the owners of, that I drink their beer all the time, on a shirt straight in front of me. This is really weird. But to me, that's awesome, you know, to see those collaborations happening. The only bitch of collaborations is you gotta have space, you gotta have tanks, you gotta have all this, you gotta keep your mainstays running, which is why like collaborations are primarily done by the big, big breweries. It's because they can give up two or three tanks a month to do that collaboration.
Bob's comment about the size of breweries being the determining factor in whether they can do nationwide collaborations foreshadows some of the issues involved in craft brewing. Legal hassles, distribution problems, even the issue of whether a taproom can sell beer or has to sell a glass. We asked Bob about some of the difficulties involved in craft brewing, and again, he was optimistic.
One last sort of major thing. Craft beer's made a lot of inroads, most popularly and in terms of commercial viability. I understand that there are still a lot of ongoing legal hassles that I hear time and time again from small brewers. Do you think that's getting better? Do you see strategies for coping with it?
It's always going to get better. One of the first things, just a little while ago, we had this brewer come in who was in town for South By. Turns out, he and the guy he was with started Paste Magazine. If you know what Paste Magazine is, it's an awesome music magazine that is no longer in print, but it is online. They got to talking to John, our bartender, and it is funny because one of the first times that you meet anyone in the brewing industry and you start talking about, you know, oh, you're a brewer, awesome, where are you a brewer? New York, cool, what brewery do you work for, cool, whatever. Inevitably, after about 5-10 minutes, it's like you get into a conversation of what are your stupidest beer laws? because every state is so different. And the bottom line is it's always getting better. And anyone who says differently is just stupid. Obviously, it's getting better. It's just the speed at which it gets better and how much people actually approach it to get better. I think Texas, to a degree, is a little bit behind the times, but having said that, we've made such huge, I mean, in the past 2 years, we've made steps that we have been trying to make in the craft brewing industry for a decade, 18 years, and in 2 years, we've done it. So anyone saying that it's not getting better and that the laws aren't more conducive for us is just an outright liar. The fact of the matter is, they're still not where we want them to be. And they're laws, man. Laws are never going to be exactly what you want them to be. That's why they're laws. But having said that, yeah, they're obviously getting better. And hopefully this next year will help us out a little bit. It'll happen. I mean, there's no way it's not going to happen. It's just the timeline in which it'll happen.
Most craft brewers seem to think that the communities of people who appreciate and demand access to their products will only continue to grow, and that this expansion of the craft brew community will force more reasonable legislation around the sale and distribution of beer. Bob pointed out that until recently, laws regarding the sale and distribution of alcohol didn't need to serve anyone besides large corporate breweries and distilleries, because other legal sources for these products hardly existed.
First two breweries in Texas were Budweiser and a Miller Brewery, so all the laws are written around them, as they should be. They were the first breweries in the state. And the fact of the matter is they can pay lobbyists to help maintain them. And there's no point for them to change it. And that's, people come down and they talk to me and they're like, oh, thank God you guys are open on a Wednesday. It's like, you go to Colorado and there's a tap room open every day. But yeah, we're open on a Wednesday. Because the fact of the matter is even back then, everyone had to do the model that we do now of selling you a glass. Nobody could sell you a pint of beer, which since has changed. But that means that every brewery that opened before 2 years ago never even thought about putting a tap room in their space. Why would they? They had to give away free beer legally. That's not a money-making opportunity. That's literally charity.
Before we finished our beers, Bob had some last words for us about the craft brewing community in Austin specifically.
I say it on the tour, but I truly do mean it. I mean, this tap room, I think, is equally as important as the beer that we brew. The beer that we brew is super important. We could not do what we do without it. But it's a business, and at the end of the day, that's the way that we interact with the consumer. It's not necessarily who we are. Because you hit a point where you make good beer, and then from there on in, you have to decide what separates you from everybody else who makes good beer. For me, I like to think of it, and this is just my personal opinion, Bob Galligan, not Josh Hare, not Hops and Grain affiliated. To me, I believe in this company because I think we brew, in my opinion, the best beer in the city, but we're also the best people that we can be. I think we do have a nice reputation of just being welcoming.
In my opinion, that reputation is well deserved. So what's ahead for craft beer in Austin? It sounds like the industry is going to do nothing but grow and improve over the next several years. But much of this will be decided by House Bill 3389, the proposition of which helped inspire us to devote this episode to Austin's local beer community. The bill would have a massive negative impact on small brewers' distribution rights in Texas, and will be decided on by September 1st, 2015. So until then, drink up.